Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness and UFOs messing with your head, if you lose a sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. And speaking of which, Mike, you've got a number of other personal stories. I wanted to ask, is there generally a lot of humour within the UFO community, or is everybody relatively serious?
It's probably a little more on the serious side than funny, but there are some funny people, and I draw cartoons for a living. You may not know it, like, from what you're seeing of me now, but I like to think that I'm funny.
Okay.
Should I be funnier? Is that you're giving me a cue to be funnier?
Yeah, maybe. Okay. And now, would you like to tell us a little bit more personal stories? You said you had some before the break.
Oh, okay. So I told that story earlier about the event that took place in 1974 as a 12-year-old boy. Now, in 2009, under odd synchronistic circumstances, I went to a UFO conference. I was very distressed. I was not at peace. I talked to a woman. Her name is Miriam Delicato. She's had some of her own experiences. She's a very interesting woman. She kind of listened to me, and then she said, "You should talk more. You should talk about your experiences." So I went home and I started a blog. Now, initially, I just started posting odd little synchronicity stories. And I've had a lot of them, just, you know, very quirky little coincidences. So I just, you know, that was my initial set of blog posts. You can go to my blog and scroll way, way back to March of 2009 and read those. They're up there and there. You can see how they're stacked up. There's probably four or five of them initially. Now, I knew I had to post that story that I just told you, the missing time event that took place with my friend from junior high school, walking home from the high school football game. When I told you that story, I was very clear that there was, like, I could put an X on the sidewalk. Now, that X would have been in front of a girl that I went to, you know, all through elementary school with me, you know, knew her from, you know, like just down the street from me, same age as me. We went to kindergarten together. So I can put it, if that X on the sidewalk of where that orange flash took place would be, you know, that would have been right in front of her house. So, you know, the initial posting, I was ready to go. I had written it up just exactly what I told you. I wrote it up as a document. I had some illustrations. I took some Google Earth images of her old house in my old hometown, and I put a little X on the sidewalk using Photoshop. It was nighttime. I was going to post that online. And, you know, there's a very simple set of things you do to post something on a blog. You know, you format it, you put it, and then the thing you have to do at the end is just push publish. So I was getting ready to do that, and my hands literally froze above the keyboard, and I was like, I'm a coward. I can't go through with this. Now, then there was a ping on my computer, and I was like, great, okay, I can turn away from this thing that's freaking me out. Like, so in essence, the reason I was a coward, I mean, I would have been admitting that I had what very clearly sounded like an alien abduction event in my life. So there's a little ping on the email. So an email was coming in. So I checked my email. The email that came in said Cindy, and it had her last name. I'm not going to give her last name here. Cindy wants to be your wants to be your friend on Facebook. And this was the Cindy that I had put the X on her sidewalk. I had not talked to her. She moved shortly after the event. I hadn't talked to her in 36 years. And she chose that moment to contact me. I immediately contacted her. We went back and forth. I will say that she was, most people dismiss this stuff outright. She was very interested. And she said something. One of the first comments she said, when I basically just sent her the post, I said, I was just about to send this. And she said something that not many people say. She said, oh, that's neat. I have a lot of UFO books. Now, I'll just leave it at that for now. So what happened was, now I'm just kind of back engineering the actual event. And I've scrutinize this event. Now, I'll also add that she was my very first elementary school crush. She had bright red hair and freckles, super cute. We knew each other from, like, you know, probably 4 years old. And so...
the classic girl next door type thing.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You know, and now... so to have her show up, I mean, basically a little butt thing goes ping right when I'm saying I'm a coward. I say, I'm a coward. I can't go through this with this ping. I have a synchronicity that is meaning, I may not, I don't know if your listeners, if they think this is interesting, it's certainly interesting to me. It was really profound. That was ground. I mean, that was earth shaking to me. That happened at that moment. What was happening at that point in my life, 2009, I was receiving so many synchronicities. Now, this is something that I ask contactees, UFO abductees, people who claim the direct contact experience. I say, like, you know, well, you know, have any synchronicities in your life? And they will always say, oh my God, yes, I have synchronicities so profound that it boggles my mind. And that is consistent. That's something that doesn't get reported very often, but it is something that I see as a very real pattern, and I certainly see it from my own direct experience. So I'm going back to that puzzle that I talked about earlier. I have the puzzle on the table. Some of the puzzle pieces are missing. I could easily just walk away and dismiss, you know, like the puzzle, like when I stand back with those missing pieces, I say, this all points to UFO contact, UFO abduction experiences in my life, but I have no tangible proof. This is a very personal journey of my own. And what is forcing me to pay attention are these synchronicities that take place. And I mean, your show ain't long enough. I could tell you more and more and more and just run the clock out if I just wanted to talk about these synchronicities.
Well, hey, how about you talk him out to the end of the segment? We've got 10 minutes.
Okay. Now this is where things get extremely strange. And there is what I refer to as like the late night cable TV documentary where, you know, you watch it, it's a half hour long, it's all little sound bites, and it shows the scary stuff of the person being taken out of their bed at night and the medical exam, and then they get put back in their bed, and it's got spooky music, and it's all lit with creepy blue lights and stuff like that. Now, that is that's the box that we as society have for the UFO abduction experience. Now, that is not what I am finding in my own research, as well as kind of my own personal journey. In 2006, I went camping. It was basically a first date. It was a woman that was in town, much younger than me. We went camping. I live very close to the beautiful mountain range in Wyoming. And so we just went out for one night, and it was something I do all the time. Just go out camping for one night. Now, it was a beautiful night. You can look at the weather. We didn't take a shelter. So we walked into the mountains as strangers. I camp a lot, so I'm very skilled at it. And so, I was completely in my element, and I was making dinner with this little camp stove on this rock. And I was having this conversation. Her name is Kristen. I was having this conversation with her, and there came a moment in the conversation when I was like, this woman is impressive. This woman, I am thunderstruck by this woman. She is so much smarter and so much more insightful than I ever would have guessed. And it was at that moment that an owl flew right above us. And then a few seconds later, another owl flew above us. And then a third. And for about the next hour, maybe an hour and a half, these three owls flew above us. They landed near us. They landed on trees near us. This was as the sun was setting. There's a full moon. We actually, like, eventually it got dark. We laid our sleeping bags down on the ground, and looking up at the sky, you know, on your back. I live in the Rocky Mountains, beautiful, clear, open, starry nights. The owls were swooping close to our faces, and it would actually blank out the sky for a moment. Now, we were both blown away. Now, so I go camping one night all the time. We got back. We were both like, wow, that was the coolest thing ever. Those owls, wow. And then I said, listen, I do this all the time. let's, you know, if I do it again, I'll give you a call. She says, great. So I think 4 days later, I get her on, you know, I call her up. I say, I'm going camping. She says, great. We go to a completely different part of the mountains. It's a little colder that night. We have a little shelter set up. It looks like it might rain. And we, it's cold. So I say, listen, before we climb into the sleeping bags, the sun is setting. Let's walk up to the top of that hill and get warm. And she says, great. So we walk up to the top of the hill. We get to the top of the hill just at sunset. We're standing there. As we stand there, an owl lands in a branch near us. And then another one. And then a third one. And we spend the next half hour, like, with owl, with these three owls, like, literally standing, I'm going to say, 15 feet, 10 feet away from us, looking up at us. It was, to call it mystical would be an understatement. It was so intense. I mean, the same thing happened 4 days earlier. Now, eventually it got too dark, and we walked away, and, did I lose your connection?
No, I'm still here.
Okay, I'm sorry.
The webcam's malfunctioned, so... Yeah.
Okay, great. So here, I'll keep going. So...
If you just turn your webcam back on, that'll...
Oh, work. My webcam. Okay, let me just do this video.
Well, it's interesting that you're mentioning the owls, because I watched a film that was released not too long ago called The Fourth Kind, about alien abduction. And this woman... It was based on a true story, I believe. And this woman... who's a psychiatrist, she's listening to these people who had these abduction experiences, and they all saw this owl outside their window watching them just before they got abducted. So I find that a very interesting synchronicity here as well.
Well, now, so that movie, obviously what the scriptwriters did, they wanted to create a scary movie. So what they did was just look through the UFO literature, and there are all kinds of stories. That would be referred to as a screen memory. Now, there are lots of stories and I've listened to hundreds of them at this point, where people will say, here's like a totally typical one. Guy, you know, driving down the road at night, he's going to an appointment, he's going to meet his buddy, he turns a corner, there's a giant 4-foot owl standing in the road in front of him. The next thing he knows, he pulls into his buddy's driveway, and his buddy's like, where have you been? And he's like, what do you mean? I said I was going to be here at 8 o'clock. It's 8 o'clock. He says, it's not 8 o'clock. It's 10 o'clock. 2 hours are missing, and there's this very strange – owls don't grow to be 3 or 4 foot tall. A lot of people report these. And those are associated. Now, you go through hypnotic regression. That's its own – you know, messy ball of wax there, where it's hard to know exactly what – you know, whether how trustworthy the hypnosis is. But through hypnosis, they'll say, you know, like, oh, I was driving down the road and I saw this owl. And then they'll say, okay, really look at one. Well, now describe the owl. And they'll say, well, it's bald. It's about 4 foot tall. It's skinny. It's wearing a skin tight suit. It's got little boots on. It's got these great big black eyes. So instead of describing an owl, they describe an alien. Now, this is very common. And what I experienced, I feel strongly saying this, is I experienced a real owl event. And that is something that not many researchers are looking into. And I've taken it upon myself, because of that experience I just explained and many others that I've had with what I feel strongly are real owls. There is an association with real owls. And this then bleeds over into the mythic. This bleeds over into the mystical. There's owls are reported. They're reported as screen memories in the phenomena, and they're also reported as real owls. It's incredibly normal for someone to say, you know, I was experiencing a lot of contact events in my life. You know, it felt like they were coming a few times a week and taking me out of my bed. And you know what's funny? At that time, there was an owl living outside my window, hooting all the time. It was there all the time. I saw it all the time. Then when the experience stopped.
Maybe the owl and the aliens were in cahoots.
That is one way to look at it. One avenue to look at this is that could the owl, and this is pure speculation. I got nothing to go on this. I'm just riffing on this. Could the owls be used There's no animal on Earth that would be better if these alien entities, these UFO occupants, are capable of mind control and potentially seeing through the eyes of the owl. I mean, the owl's got great big night vision. It can fly. It's stealthy. It's quiet. That would be the perfect video surveillance camera for a UFO occupant to tap into. I have no proof of that, but that is a very interesting way to try to wrap your mind around it.
Well, there's been experiments nowadays, even humans, of course, just being able to remote control rats. You know, they put little electrodes in their brains and things like that. And there's also other experiments where you can actually put thoughts inside people's heads using a particular the exact same Hertz frequency that your brain communicates with, like the frequency of your thoughts. I think so many Hertz or whatever. And apparently, you can broadcast through a device on that same frequency, and it appears as though people are talking inside your head. So it's certainly not outside of the realms of possibility with a piece of advanced technology that you could tap into the mind of a creature, see what it sees, hear what it hears, and control it like a puppet.
Exactly. I mean, that's the other way to look at this phenomenon. Now, if the owl, which is there's a huge mythology backlog that all takes, you know, has owls all over it. You know, there's owls show up in Indian Native American lore. It shows up in, European mythology. It shows up in Celtic mythology. And so the owl itself could be sort of a mythic icon that is just attracted to this. So the people who have these mythic experiences that may throughout history have been UFO abductions simply associate them with the owl, because the owl just happens to be around when these things take place.
We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, with Mike Cleland. Don't you go anywhere.
Bonkers.
End of my life ain't what it seems. I wake up just to go back to sleep. I act real shallow, but I'm in too deep. I know I care about sex and violence. A heavy baseline is my kind of silence. Everybody says that I gotta get a grip, but unless I let E give me the slip.
Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me. Some people pay for thrills, but I get mine for free. Man, I'm just living my life.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. You know, something occurs to me while we were talking there. It's not even owl. And my very special guest is Mike Cleland. And we are talking about UFOs, abduction stories, and so forth. Now you were talking about the little chat you were having with this woman who...
I'm going to jump back to one story, because this is the kind of stuff that I am drawn to, these kind of details. Now, the woman, Kristen, who I had the multiple owl sightings 4 days apart, that took place in 2006. When I in 2009, I wrote that up as an essay. You know, the owl sighting is a really interesting story, when I wrote it up, you know, I was very clear that there was this moment she was talking about something that was very profound. And I called her up. We're still friends. She's since moved out of town. And I said, listen, what were we talking about? Do you remember, like, right when that first owl showed up? And she was like, oh, I remember exactly. She said, we were talking, and I was trying to articulate the deepest, most heartfelt definition of what God meant to me. And I was like, that detail, which if I hadn't gone back and asked her, I would never have known, but that detail adds a richness and a depth to the overall story that pushes it way into the mystical and the transcendent. Now, this whole thing with owls, like, it didn't have no UFOs connected to that, right? Except for my own history, which at that point I was very shy to try to, I wasn't going there. Like, I was in denial. the synchronicity story that I told you, I got a lot of very strange stories like that. The one that I told you about Cindy contacting me on email, I've got, you know, like, it's weird. Like, when I sit down and like actually list all these things out, it takes a long time for me to tell all these stories. So what was happening was that I was in denial. It was the owls and the synchronicities that forced me to examine my contact experiences. So, the owls had a power. Like, I suspect I gave them that power in the sense that, you know, like I got kind of wigged out and obsessed after that one event, and I was seeing owls everywhere. And I live in a place with a lot of owls, but I mean, it was out of hand. I was seeing them five at a time under very interesting circumstances.
That must have been really buzzy, man.
It was kind of a little too intense. I'm glad it has evened off a little bit. Whenever there was an owl nest near my house, so I would ride my bike and I would see these owls every day. It was just a reminder to me. I mean, so that doesn't count. I mean, there's nothing mystical about having a nest near your house and seeing owls. But when they show up, you know, multiple at a time like that, with the same person, you know, while we were talking about, you know, metaphysical things, that, you know, that implied a lot to me. Now I have written an essay recently. It's called, which is on my site. It's called, Owls and the UFO Abductee. What's been happening is I have been getting people sending me their owl stories, and then I'll make an effort either to get a back and forth dialogue and ask them a bunch of questions, either through email or through phone calls. And I've been collecting these stories, and they are so strange. I have, you know, that, and these are coming from people who certainly fit. Some people are very open and very clear, like, I am a UFO abductee. People will say that. Other people are like, oh, no, not me. But then they'll tell stories. You know, they'll say, oh, I'm not a UFO abductee. But, you know, that's really weird. I did have this very vivid dream where these entities were standing around my bed. They floated me up, and then they floated me through the wall. You know, so there's these are the people who I'm receiving the owl stories from people with contact experiences, whether overt, that they can declare openly, or whether a little more fleeting in the same way that I would have been just, a short while ago before I really decided, like, it's not serving me to be so wishy-washy.
Can you explain exactly what you believe in terms of the UFO phenomenon? I mean, like, not prove it, just what your actual belief is. Why are they here? Why are they abducting people?
Okay, I can believe anything, right? So, I mean, we can, you know, do whatever.
Yeah, people who say, yeah,
I believe Jesus walked on water. Yeah, so, and then I'm going to start from the point of knowing. This is as far as I'm capable of taking the knowing. I know that something is going on, and I can't really go much beyond that. As far as belief, I am so all over the map. I am so, like, what I almost want to say, like, I'm empathic to people's, when I talk with someone, I get so engrossed in their story. I completely get wrapped up in it, and I just follow. And so if someone tells me a story that, you know, that they're in contact with entities from the Pleiades, I'm like, yeah, you're in contact. I get it. It makes so much sense. And then afterwards, I have to sort of, see how that fits into the grander pattern and such. So my belief is that, and I'm going to include owls in this because this is coming from my own personal experience, is that the anthropomorphized version of ourselves, right? So if you say that the flying saucers are just filled with little scientists, and they fly around their advanced technology spacecraft, and they land here, and they do research, this is exactly what we do in Yellowstone National Park. I mean, I can wrap my mind around that. These guys are little scientists. They're here doing their scientific study, and they are basically us a few years, or, you know, a lot of years in the future. My belief is that definition is way too simple. It's too simplistic. Something more complex is going on. Something that is more transcendent and tips into the realm of the mystical in a way that forces me at the receiving end of this weirdness to really deeply examine not only myself, but reality itself. It is a, you know, when the Zen master, you know, when you're not meditating correctly, you know, you're the little monk and you're sitting in the lotus position on the floor of the monastery and your back isn't straight enough and the Zen master doesn't approve of the way you're meditating. He'll come up behind you and he'll hit you with a stick. In a way, the UFO phenomena to me is one of those whacking sticks that the Zen master would hit you over the head with. It is a giant phenomena forcing me, or let's say forcing us, to think at a deeper level and to, I guess, to rise to larger metaphysical challenges. I'm sorry if I got all lofty on you there, but that's as close as I can give you to my belief system.
There have been stories of people experiencing kind of sleep paralysis and see aliens in the room. And they'll say the word Jesus, and the aliens will be like, "Aps!" and just disappear into nothing, as if the very word itself is something that's like an antithesis to them. And this has been reported a number of times, and it has given rise to belief that aliens are not, in fact, just physical entities, that they are, in fact, demonic. Have you heard anything to this effect?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a very... You know, so now that let's say that there's also plenty of stories where people will say, "I saw the aliens in my bedroom. I ushered the name Jesus, and they looked at me and just went on about their abduction process and escorted me to the flying saucer anyway." So, you know, so there's both sides of that. Now, the demonic thing is very easy to sort of go down that road. Now, if we turn the clock back a few hundred years, you know, we would, you know, before telescopes, there'd be no way we could say that aliens are coming from another planet or another star system. That wasn't even in our dialogue. Those words wouldn't have existed. We would have said they would have been angels or demons, right? That's all you get. You know, if we were in a little village in, you know, 14th century Italy or something like that, you know, and someone had an abduction experience, either they would be sainted or they'd be burned at the stake, you know, for cavorting with the devil himself. Now, they could be the demonic entities that are, you know, our mythological history is filled with them. They could be poorly interpreted folklore that was based on the UFO lore, on the aliens, whatever they might be, you know, whether they're from here, whether they're from another dimension, another planet, I can't even begin to guess. So, you know, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Which came first, the demonic entity or the contact with some sort of alien otherness that we just projected demonicness to them? They certainly could be the progenitors of the demonic mythology that is running through our history, sure. You go to a UFO conference, you sit down with people, you sit down with one guy, he tells you the freaking scariest, darkest, most horrible nightmare story. The guy's shaking, quaking. He looks like a frazzled Vietnam vet, you know, and then you sit down with someone else and she's as wide-eyed and as peaceful and as radiant. And she tells the most loving, benevolent UFO abduction stories about, you know, communing with her star sisters, and you know, so the phenomena itself is all over the map. It's got both the darkest, bleakest, demonic side to it, as well as the most blissful, angelic side to it.
Would that lead rise to the belief that perhaps there are different species that are involved here? That there's a number of different species.
Absolutely. You know, it's very easy to speculate that there's different species with different agendas. And you go to, I mean, there's people you hang out. There's a, I don't know, you're from Australia. There's a little town called Sedona where I live.
New Zealand.
And, yeah. Okay. So I've never been to, but I've been to Sedona. So, and there are folks that will just talk with absolute straight frankness about their interactions with the Pleiadians or the Arcturians, you know, or the Draconians. And each of these entities will have their own personality. They'll have their own agenda. And they, you know, they'll be as open and straight with us with these experiences as they can be. Now, I love listening to this stuff. I pay very close attention. I am at a loss personally to understand for myself if, you know, how, you know, what's taking place. You know, the way I say this is, if I went back to ancient Greece and I climbed Mount Olympus, you know, would I see the gods there, you know, or would, and if someone did see the gods there and they came down, they would treat them as the gods. You know, they would have, there's a whole literature of, you know, the hierarchy of these gods, and the gods have names and the gods interact with people. Is the same thing happening now? And we just call them Pleiadians, or we call them Greys, or we call them reptilians. Is the same phenomena acting out, playing out now? And we are just using more modernized vocabulary words, because no one's going to, you know, pay any attention if we said we submit Zeus, you know, so, or the Archangel Michael, or, you know, so all these things show up in our mythology.
Well, the only ways that you can really describe things that you have never seen before is through creative analogy, isn't it? And that's precisely what people are doing. I've never seen anything like this before. What was it? Oh, it was an owl. Oh, he's describing an alien. And in this film, The Fourth Kind, with Mila Jovovich, they've actually got real footage from this from the case and everything like that, and putting these people under deep hypnosis. One guy actually under hypnosis levitates off his bed. And they've got the footage of this, and he starts speaking in ancient Sumerian.
So that movie has been that's a hoax. That movie, that
really?
All
totally
the live footage. Yeah, totally a hoax. They did a beautiful job of it. They played it up wonderfully, and then it's since come out that it's a hoax. You know, there, so those guys actually get credited if you like really sit to the end of the credits. The actors that played in the video stuff got, so, you know, fair enough. They played a prank on the audience, but what they were doing is, obviously, they were sifting through the real UFO literature. Their bookshelves sagging with. UFO abduction books. Not many people buy them, but obviously the script writers for that movie did, because that shows up where people will be recorded. There's a famous case where a woman spoke under hypnosis, and she spoke in, I think, some ancient Celtic language. And when it was translated, it had this, I can't do it from memory. The book is called The Andreasen Affair by Raymond Fowler, and the woman was named Betty Andreasen that had this experience. But she spoke, it was translated, you know, there was this gobbledygook. They didn't know what it was, and somehow or another they figured out that it was ancient Celtic, and she, you know, gave what amounted to a very, I don't want to say sugar-coated, but like a, you know, very sweet, like, little message to humanity, you know, like whatever, you know, universal love kind of message.
In a language that she obviously didn't know.
And, exactly.
And nobody had ever heard spoken for umpteen thousands of years.
And then the floating off the... I'm trying to think through. I don't know if I've heard any floating off the psychiatrist's couch while under hypnosis, but I have heard very strange experiences taking place, you know, in the psychiatrist's office during these sessions.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break with Mike Cleland. Yeah, I told you this show is going to be interesting. If you're disappointed, I don't know what the hell's wrong with you. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. It's been a really good show so far today, Mike. We were talking over the break about this movie, The Fourth Kind, and how it was a bit of a hoax, and how you hated it, and so many other UFO researchers hated it. But the one thing that they did indeed think was well portrayed in the movie was this overarching, terrified sensation that abductees experience during these events. And I found that to be a very interesting analysis, because one of my favorite parts of that film was when the psychiatrist lady is listening to a tape, like she was at home, allegedly, at home doing a little bit of work or something like that, and the tape was running, and then all of a sudden you hear this just paralytic, absolute blood-curdling, constant screaming coming out of her, just pure utter horror and terror coming out of her, and she didn't even know that she didn't. And you see her sitting here listening to this tape, and the look on her face, kind of thing. I was like, whoa.
Now, you know, and the scriptwriters obviously had, you know, access to the literature, and there's so many UFO books available. So, are you books written by either researchers or people having the firsthand contact experience? A lot of first person stories out there. You know, in novelized form. Now, what's happening now is that people aren't really writing books the way they would have been a decade ago. They are just simply going online and writing their stories. So instead of going online, and I've actually on my blog, I've created a collection of first-person UFO abductee blogs or websites. So, you know, 10 years ago, you would open up a book and that would have to go through an editing process and a writing process, and the book would have to get printed and you'd have to go to the store and buy it, and you know, would take a year for the person to write it. So in the narrative of the book, the author would talk about their firsthand experiences, and they would say, when I got abducted that night, now 10 years ago, what you have now is you can click on to some sites, and it is not uncommon to check on these sites and have people say, I feel I got abducted last night. And so you're getting this raw, unfiltered data. It's a little sloppy. It's imperfect. But, you know, that's the job of the researcher, is to deal with that unfiltered data. And so I think that these first-person blogs, these first-person websites, the immediacy of the internet, which is a completely new phenomenon in the history of mankind, is having a huge impact on how, you know, how people are telling their stories, and at the same time, how people are receiving their stories, how people are hearing their stories. Because, you know, from my direct experience, I have received very little backlash as far as me telling my own personal experiences.
Mm. Well, it's interesting to notice that in terms of searches online, I don't know how many years ago that was that I heard this, and it might not be true today, but the most searched element on the internet is aliens and UFOs, followed closely by porn.
Well, it's difficult. I've heard the other way around. I mean, they're very close, side by side, those two in the search engine.
See, one's interested in the out-of-body experience and one's interested in the opposite experience. And here's the other element that I find.
And I'll say both of them are kind of sneaky. Like, people don't want to admit they're reading UFO books and reading UFO sites and stuff like that. It is not something you talk about around the water cooler at the office. You don't talk about either of them.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. Depending on where your office is or what water you're drinking. But
yeah.
The other element that I find particularly interesting is the denial aspect, because people are in absolute denial that there's any such thing as aliens. And how could you just say 100% that with the size of the universe that is well documented, known, and scientifically proven, that the universe is really freaking huge, that there's copious quantities of planets out there that are just like ours, that can easily support life and so on and so forth. How in the frack could you be so naive, so foolish to believe that there's absolutely no intelligent life of any kind out there whatsoever, that over millions of years or billions of years of the creation of the universe has no possibility of ever developing technology for transferring themselves from one part of the galaxy to another without aging themselves, like, to so on and so forth. I mean, it's within the realms of possibility as far as I'm concerned, because if you've got infinite possibility, there's virtually nothing that doesn't fit within that realm.
Now, so it seems like every week, you know, you see a news story that, like, oh, the universe is bigger than we thought, or that there's more, what do they call it, planets that are in the Goldilocks belt, you know, that are potentially habitable. Oh, we found more of them. Oh, and then it's multiplying. It's changing exponentially every time you peek back into it. Now, the same thing is happening when you look at the very small. You know, people are looking through microscopes, and they're coming up with the same, it's almost the same stuff. They're saying, oh, you know, here's what we thought, how small could be, but it's really even smaller. And at the same time, on, you know, so it's going, you know, you're looking at the very big, you're looking at the very small, and at the same time, you're looking at the, oh, you know, the people are saying like, oh, you know, we, you know, theoretically, you know, other dimensions were just like a, something that we would hypothesize. And, you know, like it was just like the stuff that physicists would, you know, contemplate. But now it seems that every time you look at the news, there's like, oh, yes, there's multiple dimensions, there's multiple realities. And oh, and then that, you know, like, you know, what's the actual reality of the black hole? So all of these aspects of what we define as reality, big, the small, the multiverse, the, you know, the how things can potentially be taking place side by side, time itself, all of these things are our previous constructs are just crumbling.
There's nothing new under the sun, allegedly. And what I find interesting is that people have forgotten that. They've forgotten that these things may have been discovered before, and that humanity, through some form of disaster way back in the day, whatever knowledge that we had previous to these kind of experiences, these kind of phenomenon, even advanced technology, has simply been lost and forgotten about, and only now we're rediscovering it. And it's interesting you say, like, it's as above, so below, is the old saying. And, you know, so the universe is infinite. So what, people say? Well, you have a look at a photograph of the of a human brain cell, and it has the precise structure of the entire of what scientists believe is the entire structure of the universe, and it is completely independent of each other. Okay, so it's the micro down to the macro, but at the same time that it goes up and down, it also goes sideways into different dimensions, timescapes, realities, and things like that. There's infinite possibility out there. I scarcely believe that anybody can be sure about anything that they think they know at any point in time these days, considering how much we know that we don't know.
And when I go down this rabbit hole, and, you know, people like, you know, say like, oh, what, you know, like I even use the, you know, like I struggle with the word real now. You know what I mean? Like, what is the, you know, like, oh, well, you know, like, well, there was real evidence found in, you know, somebody's backyard was a burn mark or something like that. I'm like, wait a minute, what does real mean? You know, like, I can get so lost in the enormity of the mystery that it can be paralyzing at times, you know? And then at the same time, you know, like, you can only hold this reality in your mind for seemingly just like a fleeting moment, you know? And if you, it, you know, like, oh, wait a minute. This really happened. You know, that kind of thought, you can't sustain that. You know, you got to brush your teeth. You got to like take out the garbage. You got to make sure, you know, you take the cat to the veterinarian and stuff like that. You know, all these things will invade that moment of clarity. That's just like a fleeting little glimpse. And I think in a way we're almost hardwired not to believe or not to want to explore the monumental or the divine or the magnificent. You know, we're hardwired to explore the mundane, you know?
Well, you have to have something happen to you, in my opinion, that makes you question your reality before you really start questioning it. You know, you can't just walk around and have everything absolutely 100% normal your entire existence, and then for no particular reason whatsoever, start exploring the mystical, start exploring fringe science and so on and so forth. It just doesn't happen. People don't have that kind of motivation, and what television and entertainment and things like this have been doing to people, I believe, is distracting them from the possibility of what things can really be like and what they truly are, so that it keeps them in this little tiny box, which people call reality.
And, you know, I mean, that little tiny box is... It doesn't take much. I mean, I will say that experience with the owls, with Kristen and I, that box collapsed for me. Like, I recognized, we both recognized that we had experienced something so out of the ordinary, and it had this vibe. I mean, in the moment, it was spine tingling how magical it was. We had experienced something so unusual. And that experience, you know, what happened is, it was interesting. The box fell apart. I went about my daily life, and the little sides of the box kind of reassembled themselves, and I got kind of stuck in the box again. And then another experience would happen with owls or with the synchronicity. And so I think this plays out with other folks too, who've had profound experiences. People who have the near-death experience also tell almost the exact same story, where they'll come back from being dead, and their paradigm will have been expanded profoundly. Little by little, the box will reassemble itself. It's a fight, I think, to keep that box pushed away and knocked down.
Mm. Well, you know, I don't think that thinking inside the box has ever freed anybody's mind. That's my belief. I could be wrong. Maybe living in pure denial at all times and dismissing everything that you don't currently believe as crazy is a good thing. I don't know. I doubt it, though. Because as far as I'm concerned, the Earth, the people on it, and the universe, and all the science and everything that we've currently got access to is so infinitely complex that to try and fit it into something, try to pigeonhole it and give it a label, is an exercise in futility. Mike Cleland is my guest, ladies and gentlemen, and you can check out his website. I believe it is hiddenexperience.blogspot.com. Hiddenexperience.blogspot.com. We'll see you again sometime, folks.